Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Silvercrest Metals, traded on the TSX under the symbol SIL and on the NYSE under the symbol SILV. We are chatting with the president, Chris Ritchie. Now, Chris, this is going to be a big interview because I want to first recap of some of the work and also some of the recent news that was just released from this year. And then we're going to look ahead to next year as well as discuss a little bit more on the sector, some of the M&A activity that we have seen. Starting off with the most recent news release. It came out last week, December 14th. Silvercrest announced the remaining 2021 high-grade infill and expansion drill results for the Las Chispas property. Now, these results, which I will link to below, include drilling from the Bobby Canora area, the Bobby Vista vein, the Bobby Vista footwall zone, Bobby Canora Norte hanging wall vein, El Muerto zone, and El Muerto hanging wall vein. Again, to get all those results, just click that link below. Chris, can you summarize these results for us, also encompassing really the work that was done this year? I believe you guys drilled over 100,000 meters just in the first 10 months of 2021.
Yeah, thanks. We definitely wanted to get that news out right before year end and give people a flavor for what was going on. And we tried to sort of break out the data in sort of bite-sized components so people could understand those. So first of all, if everyone recalls that we decided to make a construction decision and cut off all the data for the feasibility study right around the time where we made the Bobby Vista display discovery. So these are ounces that we chose to keep working on, but we chose to start the construction at the same time. We could have delayed that construction, done this work, but that means we probably wouldn't have started construction until around now. So obviously, with our fixed price contract on the construction, we really benefited from locking that in. We've seen an awful lot of inflation this year. So us, you know, being at the tag end of construction versus on the front end, call it luck, call it whatever you want, but we're certainly happy that we made that decision. The idea of doing this work was to then try to take these ounces. So in the news release, we highlight 20 million ounces that are in the resource category. And again, what that means is the engineering work has not been done yet, nor is the drilling at tight enough spacing to get the appropriate amount of confidence to put them into a mine plan, right? And when you look at an NPV of a stock, that's only ounces that are in an official mine plan. So what we highlighted here was 20 million ounces that we intended to try to convert into a reserve category. And again, they're only in reserve when you have economics wrapped around them, which we don't have yet. But again, if you kind of look at some of the grades in there, and again, we don't know how many will get converted, but if you want to ballpark 6, 7, 8, 9 million ounces of the 20, we're hoping it's higher, but we don't know yet. But if it's in that range and you take the $10 million we spent, you get a sense that it could be in the range of maybe $1.25, $1.50 per ounce. And the reason I'm suggesting it that way is when you add that to maybe another $15 million of underground development that we would need on the front end to go develop the underground to be ready to mine, right? Maybe that's another $2 an ounce, something like that. We don't know yet. Again, these are numbers that would come out later next year. You know, so that would be maybe $3.50 an ounce. And again, I only use that as a placeholder. But if you add that to our all-in sustaining costs, and I'll take our 668 in the feasibility study, and let's move that up to 8850. We don't know that number yet, but let's add the risk of inflation there. You add all those numbers together, you're still in the $11 or $12 an ounce range. And again, with silver at $22, you're at about 75-80% return on invested capital. And that's the bottom line. I really want to be highlighting that we're spending our money well. When you think of ounces like this on a free cash flow basis, if they're, you know, $10 of margin, and again, if you have 6, 7, 8, 9 million ounces, who knows yet? But it really gives you a flavor for the free cash flow conversion you get for that spend. So again, we're spending our money really well. That's a big thing. Another thing we wanted to highlight was the number of tons that these 20 million ounces were in. So it was around 550,000 tons. So we don't know how many, you always lose tons when you convert. So again, maybe you end up with 200,000-300,000 tons. It's not a lot of tons. But you know what? You pay for tons. You have to pay to move tons. So you actually don't want tons. You want the ounces. So again, this really highlights sort of our grade and our margin profile. And again, that de-risking that we're really trying to do while we're spending money really well. So that's the main thing. And again, we did not mention Picacho. We're also drilling at Picacho, but this news release was specifically focused on the Las Chispas area. And how this is going to translate is, now that this initial work is done, we'll finish up that internal resource. We'll turn it over to the engineering team. They need to sort of figure out the mine plan, the underground development, the costs. And in the back half of 2022, we'll put out a new economic study. And that economic study will put some numbers around the value of these ounces. And the reason that's critical is that, you know, our NPV, as it was in the feasibility study, we're hoping to change that, right? We're hoping to either provide more clarity, to remove risk, to provide more working faces and stopes to pull ore from in the early years of the mine life, all things that a lot of companies don't have. We really want to have lots of options in front of us of where to pull metal from or pull ore from early on in that mine life. In an ideal world, these tons and ounces will add value, but I think it's fair to say with risk still in front of us, the best way to put it is to, this is going to provide a lot of defense and risk management. And again, we all know that, you know, starting a mine is quite tricky. So having this added degree of flexibility is very significant.
Well, Chris, it's a very robust project, and I think some of this outlines it, and I'm excited to see where the new economic study will come in next year. But you mentioned a couple times the impact of inflation, and we were talking off mic a little bit about that. I'd love you to address it for our audience as far as, you know, how you are a defensive stock and how your project economics work, even at lower silver prices and higher input costs, but then how that is seen across the sector. So for new projects coming up, you know, they're in a little bit different boat than you guys are in. So if you would just maybe expand on that idea of how inflation will affect the whole sector and how Silvercrest is somewhat insulated.
Well, we're, you know, somewhat being the right word on insulated. I mean, we're all going to experience this. And I think what we've seen in the last few quarters are prices going up. So, you know, for example, if you were a $15, $16, $17 per ounce producer and costs go up 10 or 15%, well, that could be close to $2 an ounce, right? And what we've also seen is silver's down, you know, over 15% this year. So it's margins, right? So that's the big thing to think about. When you think about margins, if you're a higher cost producer, your margins are a lot more sensitive to these increases in costs. We have, again, in our feasibility study, our all-in sustaining costs were $668, I believe. Again, by the time we get into our first full year of production, that's a couple of years. So again, we're quite comfortable if people want to assume, you know, $8, $8.50. And again, I don't know the numbers yet. We're still a ways away. But just to be safe, you know, those are there. So for us, that margin compression on a percentage basis isn't that impactful. And I'll give you another way to think about it. In our feasibility study, we use $19 silver and $1,500 gold. Again, we have $668 costs. So if you increase those costs, maybe that $19 silver and $1,500 is a pretty good number to use. And in that feasibility study, it outlines free cash flow in 2023 of $160 million at the project level. And what that means is you have to subtract your G&A, which could be in the ballpark of $15 million. We'll have about $10 million interest expense on our debt. We'll have about 120 outstanding. So that's another 10. So you got 25 in total. And then exploration, who knows what that budget will be. But if you want to use a nice round number of 15, that takes you up to about a $40 million to subtract from that 160. So if that's the case, we would have roughly about $120 million of free cash flow at the corporate level. Well, our market cap right now is below $1.1 billion U.S., And we hope to have a lot of extra money on the balance sheet at the end of the day. So again, we have the potential to have north of a 10% free cash flow yield in our first full year. So again, if you're a $16, $17, $18 a year producer, you're chewing through an awful lot of inventory with not a lot to show for it if you're at $2, $3, $4 a margin. So again, if you then go forward and say, what are costs going to be 10 years from now? Right. And if you kind of throw a 5-10% increase in cost, it just really shows why big grade and big margins make all the sense in the world. And I would really struggle to be someone who's contemplating putting an asset into production today or trying to make economics work on something, 10, 15 years out while costs and prices are where they are right now.
Chris, since we're talking valuation, let's also talk about some of the trading in the stock, because this year, just like a lot of other precious metals stocks, the stock has corrected. It's down about 30% this year, but you look across the board, there are many other resource stocks that are down way more than that. Some down 60, 70, 80%. What can you tell us about the correction this year, but then also some of the action that we have seen in terms of some of the share price moving higher, unfortunately getting faded off the back of, but there have been a couple spikes in action and volume this year.
Yeah, so the metric I like to point out is in the last 18 months, so take the back half of 2020 until today, we've had $2.7 billion US of stock that has traded above $9 US. So that's about 20% higher than today. So if you think about where we were at the beginning of the year, you could take gold producers that were trading at a lower valuation than us that did not have construction right in front of them. So a lot of investors said, well, you got construction right in front of you, your valuation's fairly healthy. Sell it right now and we'll wait and see. So again, when we talk about margin compression, the companies that have higher costs, their valuations have been hit pretty hard. Same with ours. But again, on a relative basis, we should be far less sensitive. So we've executed extremely well this year. We're on time, on budget. Right? At the end of Q3, we had $172 million of cash on the balance sheet. And we had $60 million left of construction. We have 2 weeks left in this quarter. So far, so good. So again, the total CapEx number should be coming down again. So again, that balance sheet looks pretty comfortable there. So what we're kind of wondering is, if people are looking at relative value again, you know, our stock's down, as you said, 30-35%, but our risk is way down, significantly down, right? And that free cash flow metric relative to our peers should be really attractive. And then at the same time, we're trying to add value. So again, I tried to walk people through a little bit on a high level what the drilling news might mean if and when some of those tons and ounces make it into an official mine plan. Another thing people need to keep in mind is when you finish your CapEx, well, that becomes an asset, right? So that's about $137 million that if and when we finish also gets added to the valuation. So we're actually getting cheaper. The risk is lower. And the stock is way down on top of that. So again, when you add all those together, I think if everybody sort of, you know, puts pen to paper and looks at that relative value, we're going to look better and better and better at low prices. But when you come out the other end, we're really fortunate to sort of be near that tag end of construction right now and be one of the very scarce assets that's this high quality that's out in the market these days. So I think on a valuation basis, you'll see some analysts that, you know, probably in the short to medium term, convert part of their valuation to free cash flow yield. And again, so for people at home, by all means, hit our all-in sustaining cost and use very conservative gold prices. And that free cash flow alone should be extremely attractive for valuation purposes.
Well, Chris, I noticed that you put your money where your mouth is and just had purchased some more stock on 12/15, so just last week, and that your partner Eric had also bought some the week before that. So it's nice to see that in the marketplace that management believes it's still a good valuation, and you're buying the dip, which is a good sign. I also should disclose I'm a shareholder of Silvercrest and was also buying the dip recently. But one more topic, Chris, just to cover, and that is the wave of M&A we've started seeing in the mining sector just over the last couple of months. Kind of kicked off with Kirkland Lake, Agnico Eagle, but we've seen a string of deals with the Calibre Fiore deal, with the Newcrest Pretium deal. We've seen the Golden Star Resources take over by the Chinese firm. Hothschild's cut a deal with Amarillo Gold. A lot of M&A. Are you looking at M&A yourself for the company, or do you think that as you work towards this feasibility study that you could be in the menu?
Well, it depends how you look at it as well, right? I mean, I know for us, again, we're very happy to be kind of closing in on that finish line of construction. We got a lot of hard work in front of us. But one of the really big things that I have been spending time on and our team has been spending time on is the difference between valuation on your discounted cash flows versus the cost to build a similar asset from scratch. So one of the dirty little secrets that not everyone might be aware of is when you do a feasibility study and you look at an IRR and the payback period and your valuation for those cash flows, it ignores all the time and money leading up to the release of that feasibility study. So in many cases, you might have 10 to 15 years of time and spend before you even get to the point of releasing a study to talk valuation. So for someone to come in, I mean, I had someone tell me that Newcrest overpaid for Pretium. You know, so again, they paid, I think, a 20% premium on the net present value of the cash flows. And my comment was, well, good luck creating that from scratch for 20% more than those cash flows. You're going to be 10 years plus, you're going to be $1 billion plus, and you don't even know if you're actually going to recreate those same ounces. So I think the M&A theme is, I think you're going to see a lot of producers get together, look for economies of scale, look for synergies, de-risk production profiles. I think the juniors are going to be even higher risk. I think, I mean, they can be higher reward. But I think navigating those very early stages and accessing capital and the different forms of risk leading up to a viable project, I think producers are going to say, I'll stick with the stuff that's already navigated a big chunk of those. So yeah, for us, we're, like I said, heads down trying to put ourselves into the category of a producer soon. And if that's the case, I think, you know, the way we would look at it is, let's look at people at or close to production and look at ways to scale here. Maybe if we got a few assets under the belt sort of thing, we would take a risk at really committing to something early stage. Now, all that's not to say that we're going to have a really extensive drilling budget in and around Las Chispas and Picacho. I mean, to me, I don't even see those in the same category. To me, once you've built up the infrastructure and you have a mill to put ounces into, the risk of drilling stuff nearby is much, 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 much less. So again, we're going to be really aggressive in and around the mine. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the M&A story emerge, because we're running out of assets.
Yeah, we're running out of high quality assets. That's the key thing. Boy, oh boy, there seem to be a lot of assets out there, in all fairness, just a whole lot that probably don't even make money and will never become a mine. So there's kind of the nuance to that aspect there, Chris. But interesting to hear that, look, it really does sound like everything's on the table for Silvercrest, noting, too, the fact that you guys are moving through construction here at Las Chispas that looks to be a high-margin producer. Let's talk about catalysts, then, into next year. What can you tell us in terms of catalysts and timelines that we can all take note of?
Sure. So, again, as I said, we're about 2 weeks till the end of the year here. Early, mid-January, we'll put out an update on construction. And again, our feasibility study calls for us to be roughly 80% complete at year end. So if that's the case and the CapEx number comes down from that 60 to maybe 35-ish, I'm not sure yet, relative to a balance sheet close to 170, again, I think people are going to get some clarity that even if there is risk on that last chunk of capital, even if it's a 30% overrun, talking about like $10 million. And recall that we do have a fixed price contract in place. So I think that's going to be a very big piece of news if people think that we're on time on budget. And then at the same time, Q2, we're going to be complete with construction that all's humming along as it is right now. So again, you know, that $2.7 billion that sold at 20% higher prices, if 10% of that money comes back, that's a very significant amount of stock. So I think those two things are worth noting, just if you think that part of the risk profile is very significant, like I do at least. You're also going to see from us that updated study in the back half. So again, trying to take these tons and ounces and convert them into something viable that either is de-risking the project or hopefully adding some value. So again, you're going to see that. Picacho, we're still drilling pretty aggressively on there. That's something we don't want people to hold their breath on per se, but if we do find some tonnage over there, it can breathe life into the story where you're either expanding mine life or maybe expanding throughput, maybe getting some economies of scale. So again, that's part option value for us on that front. And we're also doing a very significant amount of ESG work that's going to be out in the first half. Part of that is because once you get into production, there's a lot of bigger funds that can take a look at you, and those ones tend to have dedicated sustainability departments. But these are the guys that tend to need $20, $30, $40 million of stock. So if that's the case, we want to make sure that every fund is eligible to buy us. So part of this right now, if you were to take a deep dive into our shareholder list, you're going to find that, you know, the top 40 people own about 75% of the stock. Right. So we actually don't think there's that much loose capital right here. So part of the story that I'm trying to highlight here, there's an element of supply and demand of the stock itself. So we don't need people to take a just double their position or get a full position. What we're hoping people do is start nibbling away, right? Take half a position, a quarter of a position. And if people think the risk is coming down, we can buy a little more. If we stub our toe and compare that to the amount of a balance sheet that we have, maybe there's in a position where you can add a bit more. But I do think if you get to the back half of next year and we do see a constructive metals market and we are executing, the stock's not going to be here in my mind.
All right, Chris, we're going to wrap it up here. Look, it's very interesting chatting with you because you guys really have a big picture outlook for this company, right? You understand the defensive side of running a resource company, not just the aggressive spend that we do get out of a lot of other companies. Plus, you guys are also sitting on one of these attractive assets and advancing that, moving that forward. Next year is going to be another big year for the development and construction of the Las Chispas project, but still with cash in the bank and other opportunities in the sector. It's very interesting and very enjoyable to follow along with. If anybody has any follow-up questions for Chris regarding anything going on at Silvercrest Metals, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We will get those answered for you. Chris, really appreciate your time today, buddy. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. We'll chat again in the new year.
Excellent. Appreciate your time, guys.